Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The Volume.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and now it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. The Boston Celtics are currently the favorite at plus 160, but the team that's third in my championship rankings, the Dallas Mavericks, you can get them on DraftKings right now at plus 1600 to win the title. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code HOOPS, H-O-O-P-S, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario, bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope all of you guys are having an incredible week. Got a jam-packed show for you tonight. We're going to be breaking down all three games from the perspective of both teams. Well, the Los Angeles Lakers just cannot beat the Denver Nuggets. I really thought they'd get a couple. I was wrong. I think they're going to get swept. I think they're out of here on Saturday. We're going to break it down. You guys know the drill. Before we get started, subscribe to The Volume's YouTube channel. So, or excuse me, to my new YouTube channel so you don't miss any more of our videos. Follow me on Twitter at @_JasonLT so you guys don't miss any show announcements. Don't forget about our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts under Hoops Tonight. And then last but not least, keep dropping mailbag questions in those YouTube comments. We're going to hit a couple mailbags a week the rest of the way through the playoffs. So game three in the NBA playoffs, in the first round in particular. Those of you guys who have been around the show for a while will know what I refer to these games as. I refer to these as the buzzsaw games, right? Especially when the team is down 2-0. Because there's usually a gigantic gap in urgency between the two teams. And then obviously you're shifting to the home, the other team's home arena. And that typically leads to more confidence in your lower level role players. That typically leads to sometimes a better whistle. Officials generally will get caught up in the emotion of a crowd. It's kind of like a human nature thing, right? And then also like that athletic advantage, the playing with force type of advantage that comes from the urgency shift. That it, like the home crowd is just like kerosene on that. Like it just makes it that much crazier, right? And like I actually placed my first three bets of the NBA postseason this year. I bet on all three home teams tonight, and I actually hit on the first two, obviously. And I was flirting with I bet an alternate spread on the Sixers-Knicks game. And as I was watching the Jalen Brunson, Joel Embiid free throw shooting contest at the end of the game, it was definitely a little hectic, but I ended up getting out of there with that one. But anyway, the one team that managed to flip that script was the Denver Nuggets. But like you saw the buzzsaw, the Orlando Magic completely demolished the Cavs on the glass, completely demolished them in not as much in transition. I should say they demolished them on the offensive glass. They demolished the Cavs on the offensive glass. They do a bunch of damage with their physicality and with Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero just working to close shots around the rim, and the dynamic just shifts. Their role players hit shots. It's a blowout, right? Like, obviously, the Sixers finally get some contributions from some of their role players, and some guys hit some shots. They finally get some production out of Kelly Oubre, and they win that game convincingly, right? But what I find to be interesting, and this is actually something that has been one of my biggest lessons that I've learned in the first round of this postseason, and every year in the playoffs, I learn lessons, right? Like, we're always kind of learning, not just about the game in general, but also as the game is changing as the years go by, as the NBA kind of moves into the future, right? But one of the things that has been a lesson for me in this first round throughout the playoffs is that the finesse guys are kind of getting their ass kicked. And they're getting their ass kicked by intelligent athleticism and strength, right? And that is like even just look at the Wolves-Suns matchup, for instance. That's the Suns team that dominated the Wolves in the regular season. Here we are in the playoffs, and the Wolves kicked their ass twice. And that is a team that has a lot of intelligent size and athleticism, while the Suns are a finesse team, and it's been an ass-kicking, right? Specifically, the role players for the Lakers, D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, Taurean Prince, like Spencer Dinwiddie, these guys are all like these finesse kind of like skill players on the perimeter, and they've run into these like athletic wrecking balls like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Aaron Gordon and Christian Brown and Peyton Watson, and they're just getting their ass kicked. That's really been the story of this series. To give you guys an idea, non-LeBron and AD Lakers have 131 points and 56 rebounds in this series. Non-Murray Jokic Nuggets have 180 points and 83 rebounds in the series. That's the difference. Like, I think Anthony Davis and Jokic have been amazing basically every game. I think Murray had a poor shooting series, but hit a bunch of clutch shots in the first two games. And then I thought Murray was pretty great tonight. And LeBron James, I thought, was really good in game two, pretty good in game one, and pretty bad tonight relative to his relative to what his box score numbers showed. But I think LeBron and Murray have been more or less on the same level, and Jokic and AD have been more or less on the same level. But it's been a complete and total ass-kicking down the roster. This is crazy. Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. tonight had 49 points and 25 rebounds. That's a Wilt Chamberlain circa the 1960s. Like that's the type of production they were getting out of their front court, not counting Nikola Jokic. And I find it really fascinating. And honestly, like, it gives me this like interesting perspective looking back at the 2020 Lakers. And I always knew size and strength was an advantage for that team, but I'm even seeing now just how much that matters at this point in the NBA playoffs, right? Like, that team was built on intelligent athleticism and strength. Alex Caruso, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Dwight Howard, right? Even Kyle Kuzma, even Danny Green. They were all big, strong, high IQ players. And that next to LeBron and AD, did they struggle in the half court scoring sometimes? Yeah. Did they struggle sometimes to go cold from the three-point line? Yeah, that was a big story going into the bubble in the seeding games before they got into the first round, and especially through the first game against Portland, right? But then like they just kicked everybody's ass with intelligent athleticism and strength. And I think that's even been exacerbated as the league has shifted more and more towards the physicality side of things. And that actually started in the regular season this year, but I even think this postseason has been more physical and more just kind of like nasty and rock fighty than other playoff rounds that we've seen in the past. I think the entire league is shifting more towards that. And honestly, I thought that was the story of tonight's game. Like, Aaron Gordon just carried the Nuggets through that initial portion of the game when the Lakers were engaged. And there was a brief stretch there too in the second quarter where Jamal Murray hit a bunch of nice pull-up jump shots that I helped kind of keep the game kind of close. But Aaron Gordon was a monster in that first half. And then the Nuggets came out in that third quarter, and just that first couple minutes of the third quarter, they threw a really good punch just for a few minutes, and the Lakers let go of the rope. And then as soon as they let go of the rope, it was over. And honestly, that was kind of, as a person who roots for the Lakers, that was the biggest disappointing thing for me tonight. Is like, I thought the Lakers straight up let go of the rope for literally what is it? Five halves of this series, the obviously the first two games and then the tonight in the first half, the Lakers kind of went toe to toe with the Nuggets for the most part. And like, what's crazy about it, and this is honestly, you know, I said this before the series, the reason why I, even when the Lakers were up 20, I never actually thought they had a substantial chance to win the series, is because I knew that the Lakers were talented enough to go blow for blow with the Nuggets for spurts. And I thought they could get a game or two, but I never thought they could sustain against this team. And it's like, they're literally like playing tug of war, and they let go of the rope in that second half. And then it just got turned into bad body language. And now it's like the effort craters, and their defensive rotations are worse, and their execution on offense gets worse, and it just gets worse and worse. And then the bottom basically fell out. And I want to credit the Nuggets because they smelled blood in the water and they went for it. And you know, it's interesting because I was wrong about this series. I picked the Nuggets to win. I thought they'd win in five or six games, but I really did think the Lakers would get one or two. And the main reason why is like, I think this Lakers team is more talented and better than last year's team. They just have the continuity. They a couple of key role players had better seasons than they did last year. The five out offense kind of optimized all five of those starters to kind of play together and reach heights offensively that they hadn't reached. They were bad offense last year with more or less the same guys, right? They were a bad offense last year, and this year they were the third best offense in the league over the last 46 games of the season, right? This was a good offensive team. And so I really thought they'd be able to do some damage, at least a little bit of damage in this series before they'd inevitably lose, right? And I was just wrong. They're going to get swept. And I think kind of trying to diagnose that, I really just come back to, I just think it's a really bad matchup. And what I mean by that is like, LeBron and AD are a bad matchup for the vast majority of the league. They're too big at power forward and they're too big at center. And they did a lot of damage this year to really good teams with that advantage. That's how they beat the Clippers so many times. That's how they beat the Suns so many times. That's how they beat the Thunder so many times. That's how they beat the Bucks. You know, like they just perpetually were able to weaponize their front court as their supreme advantage, right? If you were listing the advantages that the Lakers have, it's like LeBron AD front court is number one on that list. And then beneath that, it's like really skilled offensive players around them that can kind of play in that mix, right? That's their advantage. But here's the problem. Denver is bigger than them in the front court. They just are. Like, Jokic is bigger than Anthony Davis. Aaron Gordon and LeBron are more or less the same size. Aaron Gordon's not quite as strong, but he's a little bit taller, right? And at this phase of his career, is able to really match up with LeBron athletically in a way that when LeBron was 25, nobody could, right? And then Michael Porter Jr. is just a bigger, better basketball player than Rui Hachimura. And so now imagine this scenario. Your best advantage, as you try to inflict it on Denver, you're running into basically a bigger, stronger front line that you can't weaponize that against, okay? So now your biggest advantage has been more or less mitigated, removed from the equation, right? Now we shift down to the rest of the roster, and that's where Denver's advantages kick in. And it's like, oh, wait, like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, maybe not as skilled as D'Angelo Russell, maybe doesn't have the high highs that D'Angelo Russell can bring to the table. But on a night in, night out basis, as a two-way player for the Denver Nuggets, he's just a better basketball player. Tonight, KCP didn't put up big numbers, but how many times did you see AD try to make some move in the lane on Jokic and KCP come in and strip it down or dig down on somebody else driving and pick and roll? Like, he just is everywhere making plays defensively. Aaron Gordon was an athletic wrecking ball in this game, causing problems. Michael Porter Jr. just perpetually hitting big shot after big shot, grabbing big rebound. It is a mismatch down the roster. And so essentially, if your biggest advantage gets canceled out by Denver, and all of your secondary advantages are just not as good as Denver, then there's not really a pathway to victory anymore. Your only pathway is essentially variance, and you kind of got a little bit of that in game two, right? Like in game two, you shot the ball really well and Denver didn't, and you got close enough, but even then you couldn't close the deal because Denver's personnel on the defensive end is more versatile than yours, and they were able to make an adjustment to mitigate what you were doing offensively, play you into some of your worst tendencies, and then they walked you down at the end of the game and scored on 8 of their last 9 possessions, right? And so that's the thing. Like, it doesn't really matter if the Lakers closed the gap in terms of their, you know, abilities as a basketball team between last year and this year. And I still truly believe that. Last year, they threw the team together at the deadline. They didn't have continuity. They were running a different offense. A lot of guys were learning on the fly. This year's team, same squad from training camp to now. New offense, better production. They are a better team than they were last year, but it doesn't matter because strictly within the context of this matchup, they can't hang. And matchups are a huge deal in the NBA these days. Why do you think the Pelicans have the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors number? It's because they have lanky perimeter defenders to throw up against the smaller guard initiators for the other team, and those teams don't have the interior size to punish the Pelicans' bad defensive front line. So it's just a bad matchup. That doesn't necessarily mean that the Pelicans aren't, like, I think the Pelicans and the Warriors and the Kings are all kind of on the same level as basketball teams in the aggregate versus the rest of the league. But when you put them against each other, the Pelicans can just confront all of Golden State and Sacramento's strengths, and it makes it so that they're incapable. What did the Pelicans go against the Kings this year? 6-0 or something like that? Like, it was complete and total dominance, right? And that's kind of more or less what I see between the Lakers and the Nuggets. Lakers had a lot of success this year against a lot of good teams, but this particular team has consistently had their number, and there's been nothing that they can do about it. And one last thing I want to say about the Nuggets, like, this team has a basketball character in terms of their night in and night out effort and focus and energy, like in the postseason, that I think helps them avoid the unforced errors that can occur in a playoff run. For instance, Boston. Boston tricks off a game against Miami last night, playing some of the worst defense I've ever seen them play. 27 of the 43 threes that they allowed Miami to shoot, I thought were significant defensive breakdowns. Like, it was bad. Like, that team, they have trouble maintaining their level. They kind of oscillate up and down, right? And so what happens is like, against a good team, when you dip down, you could take a loss. And that could put you in a predicament where now your margin for error is smaller. And Denver's just not like that. They always pull on the rope. And the really good teams might be able to pull on the rope with them and hang on for a while. But for the most part, Denver's not going to give you ground just for the sake of giving ground. They're not going to give you ground with sloppiness. They're not going to give you ground with inconsistent effort. They're not going to give you ground with guys not accepting their roles and going off script and not doing their jobs. I loved that quote from Aaron Gordon after the game. I don't know if you guys remember, but the reporter was kind of trying to bait him. You know, he was like asking him questions about the Lakers matchup specifically. And what is it about these guys that you guys give them all these problems and blah, 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 blah. And he's just like, no, it's about us. And I am just trying to do what I can to help my team win. And what's interesting about that is Aaron Gordon, when he was with Orlando, he was all interested in becoming this like versatile scoring forward. And what's so fascinating about what he's done in Denver is he's been like, the hell with all that. They need me to basically play center while Jokic plays like point forward at the top of the key area with all this two-man game and dribble handoff stuff and five-out stuff, right? And he's like, fine, I'll do that. You need me to just grab every offensive rebound and cut to the rim every single time my man turns his head and sprint up and down the floor in transition and guard the other team's best defensive forward? If that's all you need me to do, that's what I'll do. I was actually thinking during the game, like, no one would ever consider Aaron Gordon to be a top 30, top 40 player in the NBA because of his statistical production. But if you actually just were to kind of just focus it down strictly to winning impact, he's probably a lot higher on that list than we give him credit for. There are a lot of guys in the league that put up big numbers in specific roles for teams that can't impact winning the way that Aaron Gordon does. And I like you, he is just, he's just so useful and so impactful and so underrated, in my opinion. Moving on to the Lakers, just really quickly before we move on, lessons have to be learned from this. And I'm skeptical about it because this is the front office that has consistently missed the boat on this kind of thing, right? This is the same front office that was like, oh, KCP and Alex Caruso and Dennis Schroeder and all these guys missed some shots in 2021 during the Sun series. So let's bail on them and find shooting. Oh, wait, never mind. We actually want a third star. So forget about Buddy Hield. Let's go after Russell Westbrook. And they don't realize that Alex Caruso and KCP were two of the most important pieces to when they won the title, not because of them knocking down three-point shots, not because of their offensive ceiling, but because of their floor. And I've noticed that as the game has gotten more physical, it's more the floor that matters than the ceiling. Because like when everything gets grinded down into the mud, it's everyone's playing like shit to a certain extent, you know, at least in terms of their like finesse efficiency. Obviously, the big strong stars like the Nikola Jokic's of the world are going to thrive in those environments. But the finesse play, like Jamal Murray, his shot making has been key in the series. Go look at his percentages. He's been below 50% in every game, if I remember correctly. I think he finished tonight like 8-for-21. He's been shooting poorly the majority of the series. That doesn't matter. His floor, because he's big and strong and he does find a way to hit some shots no matter what. Like all three games, he hit pivotal shots. Forget about the percentages. He hit pivotal shots in all three games, right? Like KCP had a bad shooting night tonight. Who cares? He was all over the place as an athlete. If your floor is high, that matters more in the postseason than your ceiling. And again, like I don't have any optimism about the Laker front office about being able to figure that out because I genuinely just don't think they get it. But hopefully this year will be the year that they learn about that. D'Angelo Russell, it's been a really – this is – D'Lo is actually the perfect example of this theory because D'Lo's ceiling is really damn high. You saw what he did in game two when he was hitting shots. Go back into the postseason last year, game four against Memphis, just massive three-point shots in the fourth quarter because he caught a little mini heater in the fourth quarter that put the Lakers in position to win that game, right? We all know what D'Lo's ceiling is. But D'Lo's floor is so bad because he goes so cold and his decision-making gets so poor and he's so useless on the defensive end of the floor that he's like downright damaging like half the time. And so it doesn't really matter how high his ceiling is if when you need him in a big game like this, you don't know what you're going to get, right? And like we have to be critical because this is the same guy that said all season that he wanted all the smoke. He literally said that. This is the same guy after game two that said that he still believed his team was going to win this series. He was writing checks and then he didn't cash them. He put forth a abysmal two-way performance tonight. 0-for-7 from the field, lost all over the place on defense. There's video of him pouting outside the team huddle after the game. And I'm like, he never addressed his floor as a player. And that was the problem. He's so worried about his ceiling. Let me work more on shooting, more on playmaking. I'm just going to lean into being this highly volatile offensive player instead of addressing his weaknesses, which is his possession to possession focus outside of what he's doing offensively, outside of what he's doing with the ball in his hands, I should say. And that ended up being what basically did him in again. Here we are. 1 year after he was played off the floor against Denver, and in two of the three games, he's been downright destructive to the Lakers. But if they decide to, and we'll see what, because the Lakers have a lot of stuff they have to figure out this offseason. Who knows if LeBron is going to want to look somewhere else? Who knows if the entire ownership and front office group just wants to move on from the LeBron AD pairing? Like, we don't know what's going to happen, right? I thought AD was more or less great in this series to this point. And that obviously is an excellent kind of foundational piece to try to build around. But I mean, he's going to be 31 next year, right? And so there's stuff that they got to figure out. But like, if they do try to run it back, if they run it back and they go, hey, we're doing the AD LeBron thing again, then you need to package D'Angelo Russell and draft compensation and whatever you need to do if it's more than one deal. And you need to bring in intelligent athleticism and strength to put alongside LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Guys with high floors that maybe don't have the ceiling. Because not only will that be better for them in the regular season, but when we get into these rock fights, when we get into these physical playoff games, those are going to be the guys that are able to play.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. Something I've always been a big believer in. When you try to take projects on yourself, you usually don't know what you're doing. You usually end up making mistakes, and it can be a big headache. And so not only can a professional from Angie get the job done more efficiently, but they also are people that you can support within your community as local businesses. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job is done well. With 29 years of experience, combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects easy. Consider Angie your hub for all your home improvement needs. They can help you find the best price for your project by comparing quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that will tell you what others have paid for similar projects both nationally and in your area, and the app is free and easy to use. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com, or download the app today. All right, moving on to Sixers-Knicks. You know, one of the things I talked about going into this postseason run is when it comes to Joel Embiid, his playoff history kind of comes down to a similar theme, right? He struggles with some of the aggression that the defenses bring to the table, and he'll have bad turnovers, and he'll struggle to kind of bully his way to the basket. And he never really developed that like consistent, like 5 to 7 feet from the basket, like over the top game like Jokic has. And that, I think, has made his game a little bit more volatile. But he's been bad for the most part because his jump shot hasn't gone in. That's been the primary issue. Every year he shoots pretty damn well for the entire regular season, and then he gets into the postseason and he can't make a jump shot. And since he can't make a jump shot and he can't make the over-the-top shot, his game kind of falls apart. And all of a sudden, Al Horford's in his head, and he doesn't know what to do, and now he's kind of like mitigated within that series, right? That's been kind of the story. But Embiid's potential for like just a complete wrecking ball stretch has always been there, because he is bigger and stronger than everybody, because there isn't anybody that can actually guard him when he's playing confident and comfortable offensively. And he does have a very, very, very good jump shot. He's an excellent jump shooter, and he is capable of knocking down shots in the postseason. He just hasn't done it to this point. And so honestly, tonight kind of felt like him breaking through in a lot of ways. Now, there's a lot to get frustrated about if you're a Sixers fan tonight. I did not think they had a good defensive game. They really, really did a poor job guarding Brunson in ball screens. Oubre and Nick Batum were just a little unfocused and getting caught off guard when he was rejecting screens, or when he would just kind of dribble around at the top of the key and act like he's surveying the floor. He kind of hit the Jets quick and beat him off the dribble. They were then out of position in their ball pursuit and committing fouls from behind. That was a big issue in the fourth quarter. There were possessions where Embiid was like glued up to Hartenstein on the weak side while Brunson's driving by Batum on the other side. Like, it was not a good defensive effort. And honestly, the only reason the Sixers won this game is they shot the shit out of the basketball in that second half. And like specifically in the third quarter, Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid were just spamming that pick and pop. And Embiid was hitting threes. It started in the early third quarter with him hitting little mid-range shots. And then towards the end of the third quarter, he started hitting that pick and pop 3-point shot, and it kind of bailed them out. And so honestly, I think it'll work to Nick Nurse's benefit, because I think Nick Nurse is going to be able to go into a film session with the team after this game and be like, hey, 2-1, this is great. You've played well enough to be up, or you're down 1-2, but you've played well enough to be up 2-1. That's great, but we got to be a lot better for game four. And I think we'll get much more of like a stuck in the mud kind of rock fight game in game four. And I think we'll get a better defensive effort out of the Sixers in that game. And that one is going to be one where you're probably not going to shoot quite as well, and you're going to have to win a different way, right? This is kind of the buzzsaw concept that we were talking about. It's why you got campaign hitting shots and Kelly Oubre had a couple of shots. Like you get better production from your role players at home, right? Like that's kind of to be expected. I thought Tyrese Maxey was awesome again. Not his most efficient night, but he had a step back jump shot going, especially in that third quarter stretch. Tyrese Maxey, I think it's been a clear success story this year, in the sense that when Daryl Morey moved off of James Harden, and especially when he made the move more for draft compensation and one useful role player in Nick Batum, that put a lot of pressure on Tyrese Maxey. Hey, man, you're the number two. Show us what you got. And I think he's passed that test with flying colors. There's a little bit of like a trash-talking match that's starting to take shape between Maxey and Brunson, too. Like, Brunson had an and-one against Maxey in the second half where he like pump-faked and leaned into him and held the follow-through right in Maxey's face. And Maxey went back down on him on the other end and hit a step back in his face. And they're kind of going at each other. And like, he's got the confidence. He's got the natural ability in the postseason to him just comes down to a simple combination of jump shooting and downhill rim pressure. It's like the perfect complementary skills. If you are both a deadly over-the-top shooter and a deadly downhill threat, it just puts every defensive player that tries to guard you in a bind. He's done a really nice job on the Embiid pick and pops of dragging his defender as far off to the side as possible so that it's a longer closeout, right? Like that is a speed element too. If you come off the ball screen and you're too close to the pop, it's just an easier rotation for Hartenstein, right? As far as the play with Mitchell Robinson and Joel Embiid, there's no defending it. It was a dirty play. He was out of line. I'm glad that the league didn't eject him, just simply because that'd be kind of a shitty way to win a series. like if I'm the Knicks as a competitor, I want to beat the Sixers at full strength. I don't want to beat them because Embiid did something stupid in the second quarter. I don't think Embiid was trying to hurt Mitchell Robinson. I think he made a really bad split second decision, a really stupid, unsafe decision because he was angry because he got ran over. I think that's what it was. Doesn't justify it, but that's to me a discretion thing. You levy a fine on Embiid and you make sure he understands that he can never do that again. But I understood the league being like, or the officials being like, we're not going to kick Embiid out in Philly in the second quarter of this game for something like that, or whenever it happened, it was first or second quarter. But like, and honestly too, like the city of Philadelphia might have never let those officials get out of that arena alive if something like that would have happened. Like there's like a by the book way of looking at that incident, and then there's like a realistic way of looking at that incident. And when you look at it through that, from that perspective, I understood what the officials were doing. Big part of this game too, just role players coming back and hitting shots. That's an important piece of it, right? The big one for me, though, is the defense on Brunson. And this is something that I think that the Sixers are going to have to adjust in game two. One of the things that I really didn't like in this game is they were doing a little too much defending the action 2-on-2 and staying glued on guys off the ball. And I understand like Josh Hart's been hitting shots, and I understand like there have been guys that have made you pay over the course of the series from time to time. And obviously, like, you don't want to just make easy reads available. But one of the things that was working in games one and game two is they were digging down a lot and making Brunson play in traffic. And he was getting into some precarious positions on the floor where he was surrounded by 3-4 guys and turning the basketball over, taking extremely difficult shots. Your on-ball defenders were doing a better job of pursuit. Tyrese Maxey in particular had much better defensive games in game one and two than he did in game three, right? Knicks made some adjustments too. They were running Brunson off more zoom action, like out of the corner where he'd like come off of a pin down into a dribble handoff, so that like it's not as obvious as Brunson just dribbling up the floor into a ball screen. But I still think there's a lot of area for improvement there for Philly, and they're going to have a better defensive effort in game two if they're going to get this one. I do think, best guess at this point, I think the Sixers will win game four. But like I came into this series thinking the Sixers were going to win. And the Knicks have shown me that that toughness gap is actually even wider than I thought it was. And I'm actually pretty concerned about their ability to win in Madison Square Garden again, especially after what happened in game two. And so I'm not going to bail on my pick yet, but I will tell you guys, I certainly don't feel as confident in it as I did before the series. Not that I felt super confident in the Sixers to begin with, but that is the team that I ended up picking. All right, moving on to Cavs Magic before we get out of here for the night. Magic got off to a rough start in this one. They were clanging jumpers right and left, and the Cavs went up 10-3. Franz Wagner ended up finally getting the lid off the rim with a corner three out of the left corner. And from there, the Magic just basically took over. Jalen Suggs immediately hits a three. And it was just like they just got their confidence and got going from there. On offense, the story of this game and this entire matchup, really, and it's something that the Magic have been doing all season, but Paolo is basically your point guard, right? And they're just running a lot of these like ghost screens with Jalen Suggs' man. And, you know, obviously there's like a hedge and recover element to that where Jalen Suggs was able to attack closeouts where, like, again, we talked about this with Grayson Allen and the Suns and the Timberwolves series, but Suggs sets a screen, he slips out to the top of the key, Paolo throws it back to him. The hedger is like sprinting back to him. He's hitting threes and driving out of that. He was getting really good rim pressure out of that. Also a really good transition game from Jalen Suggs, just flying down the lane. Had a big dunk on a spot up at the top of the key when I think it was Darius Garland kind of lost sight of him off the ball. But when they were able to switch that, when Jalen got a really good screen and they were able to get a switch, one of the things that I appreciated was like early in the game, Paolo was settling for further away jump shots. And obviously he's at this phase in his career, a little bit of an inconsistent jump shooter, but he's actually like pretty damn good when he gets closer to the basket, when he's in like that 7 to 15 foot range. And he finally started getting some better matchups in those go screens and he was getting downhill. Franz was doing this too, but getting closer to the rim and taking those short range jump shots. Like too often we break down shot making into like three levels, right? It's three level scoring. It's the rim, it's the 3-point line, it's the mid range, right? But I actually look at it more like four levels. It's like the rim, the 3-point line, long twos, which to me are an inefficient shot that you should only take when you have to. But then there's like short twos. These are shots that are like inside of the foul line, you know, all around the basket, right? Paolo hit seven of those tonight. He hit seven jump shots in that like 7 to 15 foot range. Those are a lot easier. Those, like, again, when I talk about pull-up jump shooting, it's a lot about lift. It's a lot about getting separation and getting lift, right? And so when you're doing that further away from the basket, they just turn into really difficult shots to make. It's kind of like the James Harden story. His entire career is built on this like step back three that he can hit in the regular season. Then he gets to the postseason and it's like a super inconsistent shot for him. Why? Because yeah, in a super physical and intense playoff game, shooting a step back jump shot from 25 feet, 17 times, like however many times he takes it in a game is just really, really difficult, right? It's a fatiguing shot. But like no matter how tired you are, if you get closer to the basket, you don't need as much lift to get a decent look there. It's kind of been what Kawhi Leonard has been so efficient with in his career. He's not hitting 19 footers every single time. He's hitting 13 footers every single time. And that, just imagine a free throw. It's literally inside the free throw line. And you can imagine how much that kind of makes things easier. And Paolo was just absolutely dominant in this game. And I think that to me is where Paolo's ceiling lies. His ceiling lies is basically like the forward version of Jokic in the sense that like he needs to bully his way in close to the rim and just get deadly with those like short range over the top shots, turnaround jumpers over both shoulders, a hook shot over his left shoulder. Franz kind of went to one of these tonight where it's like almost like a Euro step into like a lean back one leg fadeaway, but not from far, like from 5 feet from the rim. Like that is an area where you can get really accurate with your shot making. And by the way, don't tell me that doesn't matter. That's the shot that makes Jokic the best player in the world. Like Jokic's ability to hit that shot is what has separated him. And Paolo is a supremely gifted forward. He is bigger than the vast majority of the players that play his position around the league, and that's where his advantage is. But he got going with those short-range jumpers, and he started hitting threes. He ended up hitting four of them in this game. Like I mentioned before, Jalen Suggs, 9-for-11 with 24 points. A lot of attacking off of those go screen actions. I think Cole Anthony had a really good second quarter shift. Markel Fultz did some nice work off the bench as well. Again, that's to be expected. You go on the road, your role players can struggle. You come home, your role players can play better. As a team, they just had a much better jump shooting night. This is a bottom 10 jump shooting team. They're tied for 23rd in the NBA in jump shot efficiency during the regular season. But they got 1.22 points per jump shot tonight. Completely flipped the script, hit a bunch of shots, blew them out, right? Not even close. On defense, just a swarming effort from everybody. More switching. Cleveland went out of their way to kind of try to target Paolo. And early in the series, if you remember, like Paolo and Franz, when they were getting targeted in ball screens, they were almost like, or I shouldn't say Paolo and Franz, but Paolo and Jonathan Isaac early in the series were almost like defending those ball screens, almost like in a drop coverage. And I mean, those are guys that just don't have a ton of experience guarding like that. And so I was advocating early in the series for more switching, and they did more. They've been doing more switching as the series progresses, really since the second half of game one. But Cleveland was going out of their way to try to attack Paolo, and he just held up pretty damn well. He committed a couple fouls where he was just getting a little handsy, but for the most part, slid his feet, was contesting shots, and was doing a good job. This series to me feels like a series where the home team is going to win out. Obviously, if Cleveland can steal one in Orlando, it'll be over quicker. If they steal game four, then this thing's over in five. I don't think Orlando is going to win in Cleveland at all, but I do think Orlando has a good chance to win all their home games. It kind of goes back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. This is the buzzsaw, right? Like, but that buzzsaw is exacerbated by the athleticism. You know, the Lakers just don't have the athletes to be a buzzsaw for Denver, right? But Orlando sure as hell does to Cleveland. They are the bigger, more athletic team, right? They out-rebounded Cleveland 51-32. They were 21-11 in fast break points, 14-5 in offensive rebounds. That is a complete and total physical dominance of the Cleveland Cavaliers. So again, this is where home court advantage matters. I wouldn't be concerned if I was a Cavs fan, because I literally don't think Orlando can beat Cleveland in Cleveland. But this could be a long series just based on how difficult it is to match Orlando's physicality when they're at home. All right, guys, that is all I have for tonight. As always, I sincerely appreciate you guys for supporting me and supporting the show. We'll be back tomorrow morning. We have Jovan Buha coming on the show.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.